All right, folks, we are back on the flagstick.com Tea Talk podcast, sitting in studio with my co-host, as per usual, Scott McLeod. How are you today?
I'm doing all right, man. Sunny day, getting warm. Think spring is finally coming.
Yes, we are right around the corner from a top five beer of all time. Do you know what I mean by that?
A top five beer of all time. So it's obviously something, well, yeah, got to be a Guinness.
No, I mean, it's a situation here.
So all right.
What we're talking about is the first patio beer of the season is a top five beer of all time. You know, the airport beer is up there. We've talked about this on this podcast.
Yeah, we have.
Important topic. The airport beer is a good one. You know, the first beer when you get to that destination, you know, you go down south, you get on the bus, say like in Mexico, and they sell you those dollar beers. It could be, I don't even know if it's beer, but it's always a good one. You got another one you want to throw out there?
Oh, 19th hole first beer. Got to be it. Yeah, for sure.
The pub, like down from St. Andrews after a round, you know.
Yep.
Oh, damn. Now I just want to get.
Now you're thirsty.
Yeah,
now
I'm thirsty and I want to get away. I want to get away. But yeah, we're just around the corner. It feels good. I think we're double digits weather this week.
Crazy. Really crazy.
The snow is going to head out and then we'll get a lot of, you know, we'll be feeling good and we'll be thinking golf's around the corner and then it will snow again.
Probably. Welcome to Canada.
Yeah. Other than that, like, you know, what did you get up to this week?
Just been busy, obviously, with my little cave, building the sim, which, you know what, the boys came down Saturday, did a bunch of work in there and, we got a lot of things done and, you know, just going through the last sort of, glitches, you know, electronics, sometimes things work, sometimes they don't, you're testing out some lighting stuff. It's just like any home project that you have where you're trying to push it across the finish line and you think you're there. And then there's always some little irritating little thing that sort of keeping you from happiness, right? So just dealing a lot with that, and you know, soon I'll be able to make use of it full time and I'll be a happy boy, so no problem. Beyond that, just caught some golf, LPGA and PGA tour.
We'll get to that in a second. I was a little late on Sunday. I only caught the back nine. I said I was gonna do a trip up to the cottage, check in on it. You know, weather's turning, snow's melting, and they say they plow the roads up to the cottage, right? Well, what I didn't realize is they plow the roads up to two doors down from
them. Oh,
right. So okay, not a big deal, right?
You got a truck, don't you?
I got a truck. Yep. So I'm like, okay, no big deal. I'll stop here. I can trek it that little bit. Snow's deep, whatever. So I try to back up to turn the truck around two doors down. And guess who got stuck in the snow in their truck? Two doors down from the cottage. And you know, my cottage is not, there's not a lot of service up there. So here I am. No. I'm trucking around on my feet at this point, searching for a bar of service so I can call my dad to be like, hey, can you look up my roadside assistance for me so they can come pull me out of it and then do what I need to do at the cottage, which basically nothing, just checking out, seeing if I can find anything.
Make sure it still exists.
Right? Yeah, make sure it's still not a footprint of a human in sight. A couple bear tracks, though, which when you're stuck in the truck in the woods kind of got me a little nervous. Yeah, so spending a couple hours in there, guy shows up in his big truck. He gets out, you know, comes down to mine. He turns off a bunch of random settings that I don't know. Like, he's pushing buttons and he, you know, rocks it back and forth for about 5 minutes and he drives it out. May as well just said, here you go, city boy, and threw me the keys. Yeah, nice. So that was my Sunday, which I'm getting it from flack from the wife the whole time of like, so you're telling me you drove up there. I could be going into labor right now and you're stuck in the snow, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, yeah, this isn't the time because you're not like, you know, you didn't go into labor. So let's just leave it at that. So that's why I was late to the Sunday viewing of the Arnold Palmer Invitational.
Oh, man. That couldn't have been any fun at all. That's for sure.
Yeah. Worst things could happen.
Yeah, true.
Let's start the week that was here in golf, where we give our our scores for the week on different topics, and we'll start with our birdies for the week. So you spent most of the weekend watching the LPGA versus the PGA. So Austin Ertzoff obviously picked up a win there. So it's a, I believe your birdie of the week plays right into that card there.
Yeah, it is to Austin Ernst, who, you know, won by five at the Drive On Championship. You know, they were playing at the Golden Ocala Golf and Equestrian Club, and it's kind of a neat golf course, especially if you watch it on TV. You know, they've got a number of replica holes, so, you know, it makes for some different viewing. But, you know, it was a test for these players. If you look at some of the best players in the world, were really struggling. You know, we saw a couple of Canadians that made the cut ended up, you know, kind of over par, or, you know, and she shoots 15 under par and just, you know, did it like it looked like it was easy. So, you know, my birdie goes out to her, and how impressive it was for her to win. You know, win by five over Jennifer Kupcho, who, you know, it worked out really well for the broadcast, and the fact that Jennifer Kupcho obviously had, you know, that run at the Augusta National Women's Amateur, and
now they're advertising it. Yeah.
Well, yeah, now they're advertising it, and they're also playing on a golf course that has a replica 13th yeah. hole at Augusta National. So it really played into it, made for some fun viewing. And, you know, we said it last week, it's just nice to have the LPGA back in full field events. Unfortunately, now we're back to a break again, and it'll be a little while before they head out west and play the Kia Classic. Just a few more weeks, but again, a little bit of a gap, and we're going to have to wait for more LPGA coverage.
Yeah, I saw, due to this gap, Sofia Popov is actually caddying currently for her boyfriend in the yeah. McKenzie Q School, yeah. Which is just crazy. Like, that's a major champion that not only in the last year has won a major, has also caddied on the LPGA Tour, but now is caddying at yeah. a McKenzie Tour Q School. Like, just talking about just doing anything to make ends meet, you'd think, hey, she probably's got money in the bank, she won a major. No, probably not. Just broke even now and yeah. can do different things. But yeah, just yeah. trying to make it work. It's
crazy. Got a week off, you know, return the favor. You know, he's caddying for her. So yeah, so it works out well. But yeah, it's definitely unusual and notable. And certainly I don't think anyone else is going to have a caddy in that tournament that, you know, has won a major champion, let alone half of them probably won't have caddies as it is.
No, yeah, fair enough. Yeah, my birdie of the week is going to go to Lee Westwood. That guy battled right to the end. I think he's the one that everybody wanted to win. Yeah, I think we're going to get to Bryson in a moment.
Sure.
I think he would be upset if we didn't get to him. I think for me, he's just the guy that, he's so likable. He's the everyday guy. You know, he probably had a glass of wine afterwards and didn't think too much of it and trugged along, still made close to $1 million. And it's just crazy to see him still compete at 47. I'm giving a birdie based on, and you're going to get to this at some point too, on 18, obviously got that unfortunate break, lands in the divot. Yeah. Didn't really end up affecting him. You think Lee hasn't seen that before, right? Like, this guy has been around.
Three times.
Yeah, and he on Twitter after just kind of said, you just got to shrug it off and get on with it. The game was never meant to be fair, and that's the mental challenge.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it really is. And I mean, if you look at that situation the way it is, you know, the 18th hole at Bay Hill, that right hole location, you know, nobody's going to go at that anyway. So might it irked him a little bit more, maybe, if he was, maybe the pin was in a location that he could have went after it more. No, it wouldn't have made a difference because that's where he hit it anyways, over on the left side. So yeah, you know, he handled it like a real pro, unlike what maybe we saw for some other people. But huge support for that guy. You know, turns 48 next month and still getting it done. And as you said, likable guy, one of those guys, you know, probably the top five of those players you like to go and have a pint with after a round of golf, or just any time.
Yeah,
for sure.
Why don't you head to your bogey? Let's get a little out of order here, because divot talk, we're already there, so just hop into it right now.
Yeah, I hashtagged it divot Twitter. I mean, as soon as I saw that happen, I was on Twitter right away and said, you know, the same old debate's gonna happen again. People are gonna jump out there, talk about the same thing, say it's unfair, blah 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 blah, you know, you shouldn't be penalized for hitting in the fairway or whatever. But the other side of it is, what happens about if they did allow relief? You saw what people were screaming about with Bryson's drop on the 16th, where he, you know, he had the sprinkler head and he was allowed to make a drop, but it's very definitive because it's a certain distance from the green and the sprinkler head's in the way. But in the case of a divot, it would be very difficult to determine what is a divot and what is allowable. Yeah. And the variations and the gradations of that would make it near impossible. And I think the uproar on Twitter would be just as high of people going, well, I don't really think that was a divot. Do you think that was a divot? How close was that? Was that an old scar mark? What was that? So, you know what? Leave it as it is. Try to keep the game as much as possible, that it's playing as it lies. You don't see Lee Westwood crying about it. You generally don't see most professionals crying about it. So you know what? If you're just playing a casual game, roll it over, whatever. But if you're playing a game for your handicap or a tournament or whatever, guess what? You're going to have bad breaks. Doesn't matter what it is. This one just happens to be a divot. And frankly, once you learn how to play out of a divot, it's not really that difficult unless the ball is like underground or something, you know? You know it's going to come out low.
It's like way below your feet. It's like an inch. Just smack down on that. That's all you got to do. No different. Yes. Yeah. I went back and forth on this for years where mm-hmm. I didn't know which way to go. But I think that the key is you hit on is where does the line cross? Now it's a subjective rule in the end, and you can't have subjective rules in golf, even though there still are, and we can get on that for
it's a whole other show.
Yeah, especially like, you know, some of the Bryson Strauss, but hey, he knew the rules, so he took the drops. Let's just move on. So I've come the opposite way. It's in a divot, just play it. You know, if we do that, then what's next? Hey, you should always have a flat lie in the fairway. Right. It's like, you know, we've played golf.
Where does it end?
Super bumpy. Yeah. Like, so now I need a level out there. It just would never stop. So I'm actually with you. I don't care anymore. If it's in a professional round, they don't complain. They just hit the ball. They practice that. If it's just in a casual round, I don't even care if it's for your handicap either. Just who cares? Roll it out. If you're playing a cash game with your friends, it's just like, hey, we're rolling out of divots. Yeah, sure. Like it happens. What was that? Like maybe once a year? Like I feel like I end up in a divot. I'm not that good. Like, you know what I mean? Like lucky enough to be in a fairway. If it's in the divot in the fairway, hey, I still got a shot.
You might be proud that it's actually in a divot.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm with you on that. That's a solid bogey. Let's go to Bryson. He's my par for the week.
All right.
Bryson in general.
Now, Bryson, didn't you give up on Bryson on Saturday? I saw your tweet.
I've gone back and forth. I gave up on him going into Saturday because so on Friday, he could have went for it.
Yeah.
And he wussed out. But now it took way more gonads for him to actually go for it on Saturday. Now it actually meant something. When he went for it, I thought it was exciting that he, you know, got the crowd going. He played into it. There's a great video. I don't know if you saw it on Twitter of one of the fans that recorded the whole thing. Bryson coming up. These guys are yelling at him. You better be going for it. Go for the green the whole time. Turns into Happy Gilmore out there. Yeah. And then he plays into it. And that's where this is what I'm trying to get at with Bryson is I don't know. He's a par. I just don't know if I want him or I don't. Don't love the wording, but
so no, I know what you're saying, but I mean, is it about the entertainment aspect versus playing well aspect, or is it? I mean, you know, that's the thing. I guess it's two different things. A lot of people look at the PGA Tour as simply entertainment, but of course, it's competitive sports as well. So, but the thing is, it can be both.
Yeah,
but and it all depends how the players embrace it.
That's where my head's at. Is that he's entertaining, we'll give you that. He puts eyes on the TV. I'm all for that. He's the least likable person right now for me, though, on tour, right? Like
over Patrick?
In this case, I don't know. I don't know. It's really close. It is that close in the sense they're complete opposites, but they're just so equally unlikable. And I thought No Laying Ups had a great tweet where it's like, everything about this is cringe, where he's like talking about how he's going to tear up all of a sudden. And Arnold Palmer taught him to be a better person. And then, you know, they brought up again, like, the better person doesn't go and create a workout hype video and a 10-minute video of them cleaning their pool. And like, and then he goes on to thank all his sponsors and how he wouldn't be there with these. And it's just, everything just seems so cringe to me and nothing just seems real.
Real? Yeah.
Yeah. And I think also too, you know, it sounds crazy. I am in my 30s and it's like perspective now of looking back at myself at 27 to be like, I was an idiot then. I was an idiot at 29, right? And even now you're thinking like probably yourself, like at 30, one, you probably thought, man, I was an idiot then, right? And 40, like, it's just how perspective changes as you go on. And I think that's what he will realize as he's older. He'll look back at that and just be like, man, I was an idiot. I'm sure Ricky looks back at his all orange clothes and was like, that was just dumb. And it's just how we are as humans. And I think we see that from an outside in. And I don't know. I think he's so focused on his brand. I just don't know. Is he good? Is he bad? At the end of the day, he gets eyes on TV, so he's good, but I just can't stand him at the same time.
Yeah, two sort of follow-up points and to that as well is that, you know what, we want players to be entertaining and not vanilla and so forth, and then next, you know, we get somebody who's not. And
but is he not? That's the thing. I don't know if he's not.
Yeah. And then the other side of it is then, you know, I looked into, I don't know if you saw this tweet I put out. I did a little research last night and I was looking into driving distances. Obviously, he's leading the PGA Tour in driving distance, about 332 average. Rory is right behind him at 319.8. And someone responded to that right away going, gee, all that effort for three more yards? And it's just because of the dynamics of what they do. And obviously, it's a little bit more dramatic. The other side of that is when we flip over and look at the Korn Ferry Tour right now, there's actually two players that are averaging longer than Bryson. And there are actually 11 players in total that are averaging over 320 yards. So while everybody looks at it and think it's exceptional because a lot of eyeballs are on it right now. And people are talking about, and he's winning. You got to give him credit for that. He's getting wins as well, but people have to understand that you know, distance is coming. There's going to be more players hitting it a long way. They just may not be doing it in the same way.
I agree. I do wonder though, with the Korn Ferry Tour, we're talking bigger fairways out there most of the time. Like, does that play a part? We could go
down. Of course, yeah, conditions, you name
exactly.
It
maybe, yeah. Maybe we'll bring that up with Brad Fritch in a little bit.
Definitely.
We have him back on the podcast this week, and we want to talk all things golf and hockey and you know, his career again. We've had him on the podcast obviously before, so I want to get his thoughts on all that type of stuff. For you, you know, you gave your birdie, you gave your bogey. What was your par this week?
Par this week for me was Corey Connors. I mean, really excited about that. Obviously, playing well in the mix. Difficult round on Sunday. You know, Bay Hill was playing very hard. Average was over 75 on Sunday. You know, he shot 74. Got back in the mix there right at the end. Made the eagle on 16. His third one of the week on 16. Unfortunately, had to play somewhat conservative, missed a putt on 17, had to play somewhat conservative on 18, and really hoped that Westwood and Bryson made a stumble down at the end. So everybody was excited about it. I wanted this to be a birdie with a big win. Obviously, wasn't a bogey because he still played well. Picked up a third place finish, almost $650,000 in a great mindset heading into the Players' Championship. So that's kind of right in the middle ground for me. So that's my par for the week.
Yeah, he had such an unfortunate timing to get to 17. I don't believe he carries a 3-iron. And when he was standing over there with a 4-iron, you knew he did not believe he was getting it there when plus that wind picked up. And the hybrid's going to be in this grandstands.
Yeah.
And the like, you can't, you know how hybrids are. You can't hold off them. Maybe he does carry a 3-iron, and maybe it, even that he felt was just way too much. It was clearly between a light 3-iron or a hammered 4. And it was all day. It's ending in that bunker. I saw it on the face. I said it. I was watching my dad at the time. It's like, there's no way he's getting it there. You could tell he wasn't committed to it. And Danny's standing there trying to get him to just lay into one and knowing the next club isn't going to work either. So it was just unfortunate time. And then when Bryson and them get there, then it ends
up, down.
Yeah, it ends up being a little bit better. Also, I think that's the biggest advantage for Bryson. People are talking about, hey, that 3 yards, is it really worth it? It's not that. It's those irons and the wedges. That's where his biggest advantage is right now. And I think where he hit, where Corey ended up with a 4-iron short, Bryson hit a 5-iron right in
six. The middle. A six, actually.
Okay, well,
yeah. There you go. Well, even better. Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes your point even more.
I do actually. I had a hot take on Instagram right after it, and I'm calling Corey for the win at the Players Championship. That's foreshadowing to later where we're going to talk about the players. It's Players Week. I don't know if you noticed on any of the advertisements they had every
no not at
seconds.
All
it was almost like we were watching the players. It's like, you know, like we like we're going to watch it. I don't know if we need an ad every commercial break, but
well, it's, you know, it is their premium thing as far as the tour. It's their big event and they own it. And, you know, I started to get fired up when, you know, Ryan Hart, the tournament director who we've had on the show a couple times, you know, sent me a text there a week and a half ago or whatever. And he was getting ready to head down to Florida and he'll come on the show again. You know, right afterwards, he indicated he'd love to come on and tell us how the week goes. He was just excited to get back there and finish what they sort of started last year. But yeah, definitely no shortage of commercials by the PGA Tour on that. And you're right, they pretty much almost had a highlight reel for the whole tournament, probably for the history of the tournament more than anything.
I would give that a bogey, but I'm actually going to give Brooks Koepka's knee a bogey. This guy, not him as a general, his knee. Anyone that's ever dealt with knee injuries, they suck, they linger, you think they're good, and then all of a sudden they're just so easy to slip, especially in golf, right, where you're putting all that pressure on it. And unfortunately, pulled out the players at some bad timing. You got to think this is one he wants, right? Yeah. He's a big tournament guy, and he finally was heading in the right direction, obviously won the Waste Management, finished second, I believe, the week after or 2 weeks after that. He's playing the best he's played in a few years since those run of majors. It's just unfortunate. I don't know what else we can say. Just a bogey to his knee. Hopefully it gets better. And hopefully you can see Brooks. Because, you know, I was coming around on Brooks. He was becoming my guy. And unfortunately, his knee is letting me down.
Yeah, and it's one less player that we're going to have at the Players' Championship. You know, obviously they're going to have a great field, but having Brooks back in the game, having some of the elite players, the ones that have won major championships in recent years, involved and in the mix, like he was at the WGC, that would have been the tournament you're referring to there that he played well in as well. It would be so much better if he was there. So hopefully, you know, he was going to seek some medical attention this week to see, you know, what was really going on with it, and hopefully he's back at it soon. And you know, hopefully he's back by the time the Masters comes around, because we're only a month away now from the Masters.
Yeah, it's crazy. That's usually the start of golf season too for us. So hopefully that is the case, 4 weeks away. All right, what's your honorable mention for the week?
Honorable mention for me, birdie for me. A lot of people took the time to recognize International Women's Day, especially in the golf community on Monday. What I'd say to a lot of those people as well is that, you know, just don't let it be words. You know, make sure that, you know, you're honoring the commitment and the contribution of women, especially in golf and other aspects of life all the time, and really understand and realize that, you know, women make a huge impact on the game of golf, a lot more than people want to think. And I know we're proud here to have a lot of female guests come on the show and share their perspective in the game, and we'll continue to do that. So just a big birdie out to those people that took the time, you know, to recognize the day happening and, you know, make an effort to say something about it.
Well said. I got nothing else to add there. I think it's, you know, it's an important day. So I'm glad we took our time and golf took the time. And my my thing, I got in one of those Twitter things, like, who's your favorite LPGA player and why? And same answer as always, still Angel Yin. She still hits bombs. That's it. Like, why? Yeah. Like, that's it. That's all it needs for me. It's, see, Bryson, if you could actually be funny, I'd be all for you. You hit bombs, then just, you got to be funny, not vanilla. I was going to give an honorable mention as a birdie to Abe Answer's Miura irons that he has in the bag. His bag is sexy, to say the least. Go check it out on Golf WX. I'm actually going to go with a disqualification in my honorable mention for the week.
Okay.
And I'm giving it to the coronavirus. I'm done with it. And the final straw for me was 2 years in a row of the Canadian Open being canceled. I'm starting to wonder if I'm the problem. First term I ever like caddied in at that professional level. And since then, everything in the world has just exploded. The other tournament I went to got canceled forever. So it's like, is it me? Is it me, Scott? That's where I'm at.
I think it is. I really do. So, you know, if you got a tournament out there that somebody, you know, wants to see disappear, just make sure Stefan's out looping and it'll be gone in no time. You're guaranteed.
It's gotta be something that's not good, but unfortunately they announced this morning that the RBC Canadian Open will be canceled again. It will be replaced by a one-time only event in the U.S. I'm sure RBC will end up sponsoring it or somebody along those lines.
RBC says no.
Awesome. Well, okay, what else are you hearing then about the tournament being canceled?
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be a different sponsor, and obviously they're looking at different venues as well. We've heard a possibility of a similar type situation as last year as far as an extra event at the Memorial. But
So Workday is going to come in and sponsor.
It could be that. You never know. But yeah, that's pretty much it at this point. It's going to be a full field as far as a full FedEx point event. I would suspect as well it may go closer to the West Coast with the U.S. Open being played out there. I would suspect maybe it's going to be in that direction. And definitely it's disappointing. I know a lot of people are disappointed. I heard from a lot of people on Twitter about this. But people have to really understand that it's not as simple as just, oh, okay, well, let's run a Canadian Open anyways and just have Canadians. That's just not how it works. I mean, it's nice to sit there and pontificate about that on Twitter, but the reality is much more complicated. I mean, we're not talking about, you know, even Mackenzie Tour events are difficult to run. Corn Ferry Tours are difficult to run. LPGA, but, you know, these are behemoths as far as this tournament is concerned. There's a lot more factors in here beyond sport. People have to realize that as well. It's a very complicated process to try and run this event. So, you know, while everybody's enthusiastic and disappointed, I know on Twitter, and they're firing all their different solutions and stuff my way, it's just not that easy, and there's not the time available. And I think that's the other big factor here as well. There is time restraints, and they pointed that out particularly in the releases today, and the fact that they had to give the PGA Tour time to get a replacement of an event together. So, you know, the clock was ticking on RBC and Golf Canada and Wasserman, who helps them out with the event. And they just ran out of time.
It's brutal, but you know, at the end of the day, the coronavirus disqualification. Done with
DQ.
It. DQ, get out. Honorable mention. What's his name? Gámez or whatever from
Robert Gámez.
Robert Gámez,
but withdrawn.
92 gets disqualified though for allegedly signing for a 79. Which is hilarious. Like, that is so funny. Of just like, nah, yeah, I shot 79. I don't know what I'm talking about. 92? No, it is true. DQ, so it's not on his record. It's just, I thought it was so funny. Like,
don't fill out the rest of your card and away you go.
Yeah, who cares? Like, yeah, I'm just signing this. See you later. Like, I don't even know why he signed it. Just walk to the car. Maybe he did. We don't know, but like, I mean, allegedly, I thought that was funny. One of the best shots of all time to win a tournament. Holes out from the bunker for Eagle. Just
from the fairway, not the bunker. Sorry, from the fairway. From the fairway
for Eagle to win.
There's a need plaque a
birdie,
there.
Need a birdie to tie.
Yeah.
And there he is, still playing the tournament every single year because he won it. And then, you know, there's guys like Gary Koch who's won it multiple times, and he's not playing out there because Gary would shoot 92 and he'd be embarrassed. So instead he's like, I'll just make money working the tournament instead. So yeah, that's the week that was though. A lot to take in, but we want to break it down further. Brad Fritsch was watching golf on the weekends. He was tweeting about it as per usual. He's got thoughts always on everything and anything. Yeah. So why don't we bring Brad in? We'll talk some Bryson. We'll talk some Canadian Open being canceled. We'll talk about where his career is at. Talk some hockey. We'll talk it all with Brad Fritsch.
All right, we want to welcome back to the show a good friend of ours, a winner on the Corn Ferry Tour, Brad Fritsch. Always has an opinion, always has some insight on a lot of things that are going on in golf and in sports. And hey, it's great to have you back, Brad.
Thank you for having me. I think my favorite line ever describing me was never had an argument that he didn't like.
That's pretty much always as far as you, which I don't mind at all. I always appreciate the fact you're always willing to weigh in.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as long as you don't take yourself too seriously with your opinions and listen to others, then I think having an opinion is fun.
Let's start right there. You were tweeting about the golf basically all weekend, you know, watching it. And, you know, what were your thoughts on that tournament overall and what Bryson's been doing of late?
I love Bay Hill. I love the golf course. I think it's very out in front of you. There are so many holes where it's just, okay, you have to hit a good shot here. And especially when it plays firm and fast like it did on Saturday and Sunday. Saturday, they didn't have the wind, so it was pretty accessible, and there were a lot of low scores. But then Sunday, man, it was a little cooler, I think, and then the wind blew from a different direction, I think, and all of a sudden it got really difficult, which I tend to prefer. But I really like that golf course. It's fun to play. The par fives you can score on, but then there's two brutal holes coming in, and it was a perfect setup. You know, 16 was downwind. I think a couple guys hit wedges or nine irons in on the par five, but then 17 dead into the wind, 18 dead into the wind. So it just provides a really great finish, where again, you just have to suck it up. And David Hearn once told me, you know, I think it might've been at the World Cup, I'm not sure, but he said, you know, I was trying to figure out, you know, where to play it on this certain hole. And well, if I miss it here, it's okay. And if you miss it here, it's okay. And he goes, look, sometimes you just have to hit a good shot. Like, yeah, that's very true. That's a really good point. You just got to suck it up and take an aggressive line and hit a good shot. So I quite enjoyed the tournament. I thought there were a lot of opportunities for different guys to win on Sunday, but it just proved, I think, just too difficult, really. I mean, I think the low score might have been two under par on Sunday, at least among the top, you know, 10 or 20 guys. So
yeah, the scoring average is five strokes higher on Sunday versus Saturday.
Right. Like, it was just, yeah, that was the absolute toughest day of the week. And, you know, I think Bryson had two birdies and a bogey on the front and then all pars on the back. Like, that's really solid trying to win that tournament in those conditions. As far as what he's doing, I've said it a bunch of times, like, I'm really impressed by the commitment that he's made to the way that he's decided to play, reshaping his body, adding so many miles per hour on swing and ball speed and all that. The theatrics I could do without, but whatever. I mean, it is entertainment, right? It you know, first and foremost, it's an entertainment sport. Like, the fans are paying and the networks are paying to be entertained. So I think he certainly enjoys that part of it. But just the way that he's changed his game has been really impressive. I think what some people forget is that how talented he was to begin with. Number one, he was never short. Like, I think before this whole thing, he averaged over 300 yards the year before. So he wasn't a short hitter by any means. But he won the USAM. He was the NCAA champion. Like, he was the man coming out of college. So for this to kind of be a, in quotes, this is going to change the game. Well, I surely hope that all the teachers out there who are kind of taking this strategy and implementing it with all the people that they teach, like, he's an awesome iron player. When he wins, he's an awesome wedge player. He's a really good putter when he wins. Like, he has the entire skill set, right? So you can't just have distance and then hope that makes up for all the other deficits in your game. It's definitely an advantage. The top 10 players in the world, maybe one or two are average length. Just as a guess, like Patrick Reed and Webb Simpson. But, you know, to just say that he's doing it with length is, you're not looking at the stats. Whoever would say that.
Yeah, it's almost disrespectful to what he's done as far as all the other parts of his game. And like you said, you know, he's not coming in here as an unskilled player. And it's not like you're going to take a player that, you know, doesn't have any skills already, add a few extra yards, and instantly he's going to be winning, you know, U.S. Opens.
Right. Like, in the U.S. Open, I wish I remembered if this was the absolute truth or not, but I think he led in proximity to the hole for the week.
Sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he Now, some of that is, yeah, he's closer to the hole, but he was also in quite a bit of rough the whole week, and he managed to get through it with his power and speed, but also touch. Not easy to wedge it onto U.S. Open greens from the rough. And the last thing I'll say about him is, you know, a hole like 17 at Bay Hill, where I think a bunch of guys were hitting 3 and 4 irons, and he hit 6 iron, which is just a massive advantage. So that part of the power structure in his game is also notable, is how far he can hit his irons. There were a couple times, I think, on par fives, he had 240 and 250, and he's got irons out in his hand. And I'd be like, do I want to hit a hybrid hard, or do I want to, you know, fillet a 3-wood in there? And, you know, he's got 4 and 5 irons. So that is another aspect of his game that is a huge advantage. And the distance, again, plays a part in that. I think on 17, right before he hit, they said the average to the hole was 50 feet on the day, and he had a 6 iron to 20 feet or 21 feet. Huge advantage. And especially when Westwood's trying to make up a stroke on the last two holes, really, really difficult to do that when the guy's got 2 or 3 clubs less than you do.
For sure.
So, and saying all that, he won by one, right? So, you know, he's not DJ lapping the field by 11 at a playoff event when he's clearly the best player playing the best, but he did win, you know, an outstanding golf tournament. The field is really strong. So, you know, he's one of the best players in the world. That's really easy to say. It's not controversial. But when it comes to the whole, you know, it's changing the game, I'm kind of jury's out for me on that.
So for you, as not being necessarily of that length, to put it, you know, nicely, I guess, what type of setup would you need to be able to compete with that type of length, especially at that level where we're talking like the longest of the long on the PGA Tour? So what type of setup, say we're, you know, rolling back the ball isn't a possibility, what do you believe allows it for someone like yourself to compete on a equal scale there?
Well, that one was a good setup. You know, it was 11 under par that won the golf tournament on not a long golf course, and the par fives are accessible. I think Corey Connors, who's not a long hitter, played the par fives the best on the week cumulatively. So that's that would be a real good setup. I played one event there, and I had a good week up until Sunday in my rookie year, and I felt like that was a golf course that you could compete on. I mean, you don't have to hit drivers on that golf course. I think there were a couple holes where Bryson was hitting his I don't know if it's a driving iron or a 2 iron or what it was, but there are a couple holes out there that are actually kind of uncomfortable for his driver. I think 8 was one of them. 11 is the hole with the water down the left, I think, and in front of the green. And on Saturday he had some weird number like 230 to the hole or something. And other guys were hitting their driver and having, you know, 7s and 8 irons. So there, you know, there are courses, and you know, it may be with hazards like Bay Hill has on certain holes, but there are going to be courses where his length isn't as much of an advantage as it is at, say, a golf course like a Torrey Pines would be a huge advantage, where I actually played fairly well.
Pretty well, yeah.
A couple top times. 10. Yeah, so, but I would call Torrey more of a, hey, how's your 4 and 5 iron? Like, are they on for the week? Because if they are, you can hit some greens and regulation on par fours. And then, you know, not all the holes are super long, and you can, if you're playing well, then you'll score okay. But that one in particular, Bay Hill, is a good example of, I think it kind of takes, it keeps any player competitive. Like Matt Every's won there a couple times. He's not long. But they've had Rory and Tiger and like that. But I mean, Tiger's a different story. He has his, he's a horse for so many different courses that I don't think it matters what the setup is.
So where do you think, you know, this plays into, I don't know if you never did you ever play the Players Championship? I don't think so, but have you,
I never
you
did, play, no.
But you played TPC Sawgrass, correct?
I have, yep.
Yeah, so where do you see that, you know, a guy like, you know, again, I don't want to dominate it based on Bryson, but where do you see, you know, a game like his fitting into a golf course like that, that really emphasizes strategy so much, especially if it's firm and fast this week.
Yeah, I would, like, he wouldn't be my quote unquote favorite just because of how far he hits it.
Right.
You know, obviously if he has a good week, he can win on any golf course, I think, but it's not an auto type thing where it's like, yeah, he's going to destroy this golf course. That's not the type of course it is. Most Florida courses probably wouldn't maximize his advantages that he has. Sawgrass is very, you know, it definitely helps keep the ball in the fairway because the greens aren't very big at all. But it's more a precision golf course into the greens. So I would, you know, I wouldn't put him an advantage over everybody else by any means. You know, the guys who are consistent, I think, are the ones to look at. And he's, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but coming into Bay Hill, I don't think he'd had like a particularly great season. I don't think. I do keep kind of my eye on him quite a bit, and I don't want to say I don't root for him. That's not a good thing to do for anybody.
Sure,
but I'm not a huge fan of the narrative of kind of the long drive type style that's going to dominate the tour for years to come.
But do you think that's more the media and the fans, you know, talking about it and the media covering it more than what he's doing? I mean, is he the one, do you think, precipitating that?
Oh, it's not his fault. No, there's no question. It's not his fault. It's kind of a, I don't know if you call it lazy by the media, but I remember
it's lazy.
Two falls ago. I was having a lot of conversations with my instructor. It's like, man, I gotta get longer, gotta get longer. And Webb won a couple times and Andrew Landry won, and it was like, dude, the last seven winners are all very average length hitters. Now they're not the best fields in the world, but still, you know, there's a ton of really long players who sit between, you know, 75th and 150th on the FedEx Cup list. And they're not the ones winning. It's just guys with an overall skill set. So that was one conversation that we had. Like, you have to take the most notable events out of your brain and make it a longer, you know, play the long game, play the, you know, who's winning every tournament, not just who won this week. Oh, Bryson won.
Yeah.
Don't fall victim to that part. So maybe it is a little bit of a lazy narrative, but then again, you know, when DJ wins by as many as he has over the past couple of years, you know, he does it with length, but he also does it with improved putting. I think a couple of years ago, he was the best wedge player in the game, which was kind of a crazy, crazy improvement that he made. So, you know, all round game is always going to make you a ton of money. So, I don't even remember your question.
Well, that's all right. I mean, you know, we're talking a lot about Bryson here, and we'll get back to talking a little bit of the PGA Tour, because we actually definitely, you know, have to obviously talk about the Canadian Open and stuff. But, you know, let's update people a little bit on your status. I mean, you know, you are still a player and you're out there, trying to make a living. I mean, you just came back from a pro-am in Mexico, but where are things for you, especially given the schedule is sort of up and down right now?
Yeah, a lot of Mondays planned in the next little while. We were talking before we recorded this. You know, the PGA Tour has a lot of non-Mondayable events leading up to, I guess, the Honda, which is next week. Then it'll start being, you know, there's going to be Monday qualifiers a lot, but, you know, the Genesis didn't have one. Pebble doesn't have one. Obviously, the World Golf Championship doesn't have one. Players doesn't. Bay Hill doesn't. So there's a lot of weeks where they just don't have Mondays. Korn Ferry has played one event so far this year. They're starting up again in a couple weeks. So, you know, I'll be doing kind of a mix of both. You know, last year I did a lot of both tour Monday qualifiers, and I just felt overall, I felt like a more confident player when I was at the PGA Tour Mondays. And I think it was just size of field that it didn't seem like it was as daunting of a task. You know, you show up for a Korn Ferry Monday and there's 156 players for four spots. And if you tee off in the afternoon, you already know what you can't, you know, what you have to shoot, you know, just to get in a playoff. And a lot of the time it's, seven, eight under, nine under. PGA Tour typically have like about 60 guys, and you know, there's always going to be a bunch of pre-qualifiers that are in that, I guess the best way to say it is they don't particularly scare you. I mean, I'm sure a bunch of pre-qualifiers have Monday'd, but they're not the ones that you kind of watch for. And the scores at the PGA Tour Mondays just aren't as low. I missed a playoff in Hartford by one at 4 under par. I did kind of get burned in Columbus. I shot 8 and 9 was the number, but there were a bunch that was 3 under, 4 under. So generally my attitude, not on purpose, but it's just the way it was more positive at the PGA Tour Mondays. And so I might try those, more than the Korn Ferry ones, but Korn Ferry is where I have my status. If I ever get into an event, get on the money list, then I'll be able to play more events, as a member. So, I think, between those two tours and a couple mini tour events here and there around where I live in Raleigh, North Carolina, I think that's kind of the gist of it for me this year. And just looking forward to getting better status at Q School at the end of the year, because last year was tough. No Q School, everything rolled over. I understand why they did it, but it certainly didn't help me having no Q School. So hopefully that is kind of business as usual, and I think it will be now that most travel restrictions in the U.S. and everything are opened up and everything. I think that'll be a full go, I think, at the end of the year.
Yeah, it's got to be difficult though, considering, you know, you're not that far removed from a win on the Korn Ferry Tour. It's coming up on 5 years. It's really not that long ago, considering 2020 is basically a write-off for the Korn Ferry Tour in many ways. But you know, how difficult has it been, you know, every week throwing upwards to probably $1,000 a week trying to Monday qualify, knowing that, hey, I just need to get out there and I know I can compete?
Yeah, it's been a kind of a weird couple years. You know, I had my chance in 2019. I had basically full status after a really good Q school at the end of 2018. But I just didn't play well. I played very poorly, actually. So that was my bad. And then Q School 2019, I didn't play well at second stage. So I kind of made my bed for the next year. And then, you know, who knew that COVID would throw an extra year into that loop. But yeah, you know, it's the same for a lot of guys. I think in my position, there's a lot of guys who have even made a little bit of money from last year's money list and can't get in events this year just because of how crowded it is. I think I was in Tampa a couple weeks ago and played a practice round with Nick Thompson, and he made about 26,000 on the Korn Ferry last year, and they're just rolling over, and he wasn't in the event that week, which was kind of surprising to me. And he said, not only am I not in, I'm the 25th alternate right now. So
wow.
Need another pandemic to get in.
Wow.
Yeah. Now he ended up, he was in the first group, I think, on the Monday and made 10 birdies and Monday qualified. So he didn't
take care of business. I'll get you there.
That's it. He took care of business, right? So, you know, I can talk about it all I want, but you just got to go shoot a low score in one of these Mondays and get in. So that's my full intention. And the weather's been turning for the better in the last week here. So it's nice to have short sleeves on and not, you know, three layers and wearing a toque practicing, and our golf course was just saturated for like the last month. It's just been really, really bad. I can't do anything about it really. Just the rain has been nonstop. We set a record, I think, in February for rain. So it's just been, it's not been ideal for preparation, yeah. Let's say. Yeah.
Well, you know, getting back to, you know, talking about some things about the PGA Tour, obviously today, you know, the day we're recording here, the announcement was made that the RBC Canadian Open is going to be canceled. Obviously a tournament you've played, you know, in the past and, you know, important because it is a national championship up here. Any thoughts on that and disappointments? Because obviously, you know, it's one you look forward to as well.
Yeah, for sure. I would have looked forward to at least trying to qualify for it. But again, the times we're in, nothing is easy when we're talking about professional sports and cross-border, guys crossing the border and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's pretty disappointing, but I expected it. I think I read something from Jason Logan not too long ago where it was like, hey, everyone needs to expect this. So I wasn't caught off guard or anything. You know, it's 2 years in a row it was supposed to be at St. George's, right? I think that's the yes. case. They just they can't catch a break there.
No, but, not at all.
Yeah, and it would have been interesting because I, you know, they've only played, I think, one or two opens there in the last, you know, 20 years. I think just maybe the one that Carl...
2010 was the last one.
Yeah, and my buddy Carl won that one.
Yes.
And a great story about him drinking beer in the clubhouse on Friday, yeah. thinking he's going to miss the cut, and then shoot 61 on Saturday.
Eight beers.
That's
eight
it?
Eight beers, probably a touch of a hangover.
Maybe.
Yeah, but obviously disappointing. But you know, there are levels of disappointment and awkwardness and anxiety these days. And you know, for me, it's low on that scale. But I'm sure for someone whose job is the Canadian Open, it's pretty high on their list. You know, they look forward to it all year. It's a big part of, I think, revenue for Golf Canada, so that stinks for them. I've heard that RBC is going to try to do something with a little bit of the money that they would have normally committed to the Canadian Open for golf in Canada, so that would be pretty neat. I know that the first tee is kind of getting going in Canada. Maybe it'll revolve around that, and that'd be cool too. So it's just one more thing in the last couple of years, right? Like you shake your head, you're like, that sucks, but what can you do?
And you've got kids, so, you know, you have to explain that too. And it's all relative to everything of, you know, just life in general. I mean, it's PGA Tour and everything, but we all have to live our lives and that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. If my kids ask me anything about golf, it's when can we go to the Greenbrier next? That's basically that's their question. They love that place. So
we were joking earlier that in 2019 I caddied two PGA Tour events and neither one has continued since, one being the Canadian Open and the other being the Greenbrier. So you can say sorry to your kids, it's all my fault.
Did you stay at the Greenbrier?
No, I stayed just outside in a little town called Clifton Forge. I was not paying Greenbrier pricing, but that that is going back in time to old Republican money down at the Greenbrier. That's for sure.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's quite a place. My family really enjoyed it. You kind of have to make the decision. Like if you bring your family, you're all in for the week, and if you don't make the cut, then you're losing a lot of money.
A lot of money.
But,
yeah.
But it's one of those, like, when it was the 4th of July, it was so cool. We went there a couple of years in a row, and it was, you know, they had their 4th of July fireworks, and they had concerts. I think they had Aerosmith one night. There was a country band once that my wife and our babysitter went to. We took a babysitter there so we could kind of, you know, do a few things without the kids. I mean, it was a really cool kind of family place. Not very good, I've heard, for the caddy situation with staying. You know, there's not many places to stay local. And,
no.
Yeah, me and a couple caddies stayed in Clifton Forge and ended up at a bar where you had to have a membership and knew the back door to knock on the door to get in. That's small town Virginia.
Yeah. Knock twice, not three times, right?
Exactly. Yeah. End up in a different door.
Yeah.
Let's talk to players a little bit. You know, you mentioned you haven't been able to play there, but you played there a lot. Who do you like going into this week? You've been watching a lot of golf. We love to have your takes. Scott and I are about to play some, do our draft after we wrap this up. So you can help one of us choose who's going to buy the other guy a bottle of wine potentially.
Okay. So I'm going to rip this off from the guy who he cooks me lunch a couple times a week at the range where I practice.
Okay. Expert.
He works, he works in the kitchen, but he's a big DraftKings golf bettor, and he, I think he does okay. So I asked him about his lineup today, and he said, you know, I got a really good lineup, I think. And a couple of guys he had were Xander Schauffele, who I think has had some pretty decent success there. I think he finished second there 1 year not too long ago.
Yep, he was in the mix.
So it was Xander and Patrick Cantlay, who I think is a pretty good pick, kind of a precision type guy. You know, the scoring of the players usually doesn't get crazy low, and I think a guy like Cantlay is like the 10, 11, 12 under type of guy. And I can't remember who else he picked, but those two are actually pretty good picks. Cantlay, Schauffele, and then an outlier. You know, you wouldn't go Westwood again just because it's hard to go back to, you know, compete really, really tight 2 weeks in a row, especially on those two golf courses, but maybe like a Fleetwood. Ooh. Yeah, Tommy Fleetwood. He had a decent week too, but yeah. I think he's kind of primed for.
And he can just walk across the water right to the 17th green, so it's perfect.
I was watching prior. They had kind of a rerun of a few years ago. I think the last time Tiger won, which would have been 2013, I believe, there. Maybe 20, yeah, something like that. And some of the names in the mix that just aren't even around anymore, like David Lingmerth. Where is that guy? You know, Golf Digest
Brad knows him well.
Find that guy right now. You know him well. Where is he?
I do, yeah. Well, I mean, he's right at the Players. He lives right there on the course, I think. But I think he's in that limbo, like the past champion status with not great access. So you'll see him at, you know, Puerto Rico, Mississippi, Kentucky, those off opposite field events. And then maybe at the end of the field at like a Pebble Beach or something like that. But other than that, I think he's mostly Corn Ferry Tour now.
Yeah, you guys used to play a lot of practice rounds together, I think. Do I recall that right?
Yeah, yeah. And actually you played in his group when he won his first event in it was at TPC Potomac in DC on the Corn or the web.com tour at the time. And he's a big hockey fan, big Washington Capitals fan, so we talk a lot of hockey together. But yeah, he's a super guy. But yeah, Steph and I was actually watching that, you know, half an hour ago or an hour ago. I was just happened to have the Golf Channel on, and there were some, you know, there were some big names, but there was also Lingmerth, Jeff Maggart was in the mix.
That one rattled me too.
Yeah. But it is a course like that though, right? Like, you know, number two is not a long par five. Number nine is pretty long, and the green is tiny. But you know, 11. You can hit the green in two as a medium length hitter, and then 16 is not long at all. So, the par fives are precision; they're not power. And then the rest of the course, you know, there aren't many. I can't think of any like 480, 490 par fives. You know,
I think maybe 15 or 14, maybe the longest.
Yeah, 14, 15 are longish, but
and five maybe I think.
Yeah, but you know, I read that it's been pretty dry out and it's firm and fast already. So you're not going to have, four and five irons into the par fours. You shouldn't. So, I think it opens up the field quite a bit, and it is, I think, well, I like to call it the strongest field in golf too. Right. So yep. I think, I think that it really is an event where it's hard to call a skill set, you know, particular skill set, one that would dominate there. It's just, hey, are you playing well? And, you know, a lot of the time it's some of the best players in the world, like a Rory, Sergio, Jason Day, they've all won there. Tiger obviously won a couple times, but guys can come out of the woodwork a little bit, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And thanks for the advice. Maybe Scott and I might take some when we do our draft in a little bit. You mentioned hockey. We'd be remiss not to chat a little puck with you. My Toronto Maple Leafs sit atop of the North Division. Your Ottawa Senators, not so much. Are you a Sens fan these days, or are you kind of changing your alliance over to the Hurricanes?
No, I am a Sens fan through and through. I got the Hurricanes game actually on in front of me. It's really weird because I was becoming a pretty big Hurricanes fan, and then they got pretty good.
Yeah, they're real.
And now I and now I don't care as much. It's kind of weird. And I like all their players. They've got some really good young players. They've got a couple guys who I really like who aren't the most skilled. Warren Fogle is such a cool player. He's so fast. Mm-hmm. He has terrible hands, but he pulls out some of the best goals you'll see, where the hands will come out for some reason. And then their defense is crazy deep too. So I'm a Canes fan. I went to the first game actually last week where fans could actually get in the building. They played Detroit. So I went to that game.
What was that like?
$92. It was okay. Little awkward in terms of game day operation. Like concessions, there was one or two stands open on each floor.
But well, you don't need much these days anyways. I mean, you're looking slender, so.
Well, it was like, can I get a hot dog or a sandwich? Like, they were prepackaged. They were out of food at the first intermission. It was very weird. And they kind of – so I can give you the 411 on it. So the most of the main concession stands at Canes games are staffed by volunteers who are working for particular charities for that night. So let's say, you know, St. Joseph High School band is the kind of the charity for the night. They're trying to raise money. Well, all of the parents will volunteer to work behind at the concession stands. And so a certain percentage will go to their, their not charity, but, you know, fundraise.
Yeah.
And what happened is that COVID threw a whole bunch of loops at them, including like some insurance stuff as well, with, you know, people who aren't on the payroll working at the game as a volunteer and having to get them tested pregame and all that stuff. I just don't think that the team was willing to do it. They're like, you know what, for only 3,000 people, they have their own beer at Canes games. It's called Storm Brew. It's $5 for a can. It's actually pretty good for a, not that I've tried it, but the price is good, right? For a sporting event, $5 is pretty good. So they had that. They had, you know, bottled sodas and everything. But, you know, I wanted something to eat. I got a bag of chips. Like, that's all I could have.
They're like vending machines or anything like that out there?
There were, but they were actually turned around backwards.
Wow.
Yeah, it was just really weird. And I think I would wager that they probably got a couple of emails from people who went to the game and were a little bit disappointed with the options, because, you know, look, if you took your, you know, 10-year-old or 8-year-old kid to the game and you're like, yeah, we'll eat there, and then you can't eat there, you've got an ordering kid for 3 hours, right? That's not very fun.
What were the ticket prices like? Were they still normal or were they reduced, or how was that?
No, I paid I was second row from the top in the third level. So not a good seat. And I paid $75, and you know, after the ridiculous fees and everything from Ticketmaster, it was $92. Wow. And at a Canes game, that's bordering on almost triple.
Yeah, that's like price. You could probably get down to Lower Bowl back in the day for like 2 years ago.
Yeah, I looked at the Lower Bowl and it was between $175 and $220 before fees in the Lower Bowl. So I was like, holy cow, I guess they're trying to get revenue for over a year, right? Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
But parking was free, which was great.
Oh, what a steal.
I threw that in for you.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Well, we don't want to keep you too much longer. So going forward, you know, any plans coming up here in the next couple of weeks where we can keep an eye on you?
So I've got a couple of events kind of in my head. There's a G-Pro Tour event in Savannah. There's an Outlaw Tour event in just south of Las Vegas, right before a Monday qualifier for Korn Ferry in Vegas itself. So those are a couple of events I'm planning on playing. Got a couple of business things going on actually, and you'll be hearing about it fairly soon. Scott knows a little bit about it. But yeah, we've got a little golf company, burgeoning golf company that's coming out of Ottawa, and you know, hopefully you can have me on again, and when the time is right, we can share all those details, and I think people will like it. So until then,
we'll find you on your couch.
Well, just practicing, trying to stay square and powerful through impact, because man, I've had developed some bad habits over the last couple of years. But I'm getting it back. I don't want to be the typical golfer, but I found something, guys. And I'm on the road to making it a lot better.
Awesome. Well, that's great to hear. Really appreciate that, Brad. Wish you the best of luck in that. And certainly we'd love to see you back out on the Korn Ferry Tour full time, and, eventually back on the PGA Tour as well. So thanks for everything. And hopefully we'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you, Brad, for that interview. Guy always has something to say, and you know, he's a guest you could have on every single week. He could have his own podcast and put us out of business real quick.
Yeah, he's a smart guy, always has been. Always enjoyed interaction with him, and you're right, he's always got an opinion on something. He always put some thought into it as well, but he's usually pretty insightful and pretty sharp about things. So always great to have Brad on, and you know, he's always going to have an opinion, which is great to hear.
Yeah, so it's Players Week, the fifth major. How many times are we going to hear that this week?
100 million.
I'm kind of over it. I'm kind of over the idea of calling it the fifth major. It is like, but like, they're never going to change it to be the fifth major. What, you got some insight? You got some
thoughts? No. I just don't know.
Let's put Ryan Hart on the spot next week after.
Yeah.
I think we've already tried to bring it up to him and he won't do anything, but let's just do it until he refuses to take it.
just keep digging at him and see if he'll bite eventually.
So you call it the fifth major all the time, and just bring up things that just really aren't true, and see how he feels about that till he just hangs up.
And then expect never to get into the President's Cup in 2024. He'll just
or the Players or anything along those lines. Well, we. Last couple of weeks we've been picking winners, right? Just straight up winners. If the winner gets it, one of us gets it right, then we buy the other person a bottle of wine. I got your bottle of wine. I'm waiting until you say come play around on the simulator.
Oh, it's coming with conditions now.
I'm not going to drive all the way over there to look at the simulator. And then you'd be like, oh, come in and hit some. I don't have my own clubs. You know, I'm not going to do all that.
So all right, fair enough.
That's what you get. So usually with the big ones, we always do a draft, right, where we go back and forth, and it's about the money made, right? And we usually do three players and then a fourth player that has to have 100-to-1 odds or worse. And again, we'll play for a bottle of wine, same thing, $40 valuation at most, and maybe we're just going to be swapping wine bottles at the end of this. This one could be worse, though, because I could end up walking over to your place with two bottles of wine by the
end. Love it.
Or we could just be swapping. So how do you want to do it? You want to go first with your first draft pick?
You know, you go first because I know exactly who you're going to pick already, because you've already said it earlier in the show, so you may as well just get it over with.
It's true. I truly believe this guy is going to win. You're going to get insane odds on him. I believe he is at 80-something to 1. Just pulling those up now. And that's Corey Connors.
Yeah, 80-to-1. Yep. Yeah,
Corey Connors. I'm taking him. I'm going to put some of my own scratch on him to actually win. Fired off a text after his third place, said, hey, next week you're going to pick up a win. He must have been busy. You know, he was press and stuff. He probably read it and he thought he'd get back to me, forgot. But so maybe this will help. Corey, you're hearing it here first. I picked you to win over that text that told you, threw it on Instagram, and here it is on the pod. First overall pick, Corey Connors.
All right. I dig that one for sure. It's hard to argue with that one. I'm going to have to find out something of my own, though. You know what?
It is hard out there, too. You saw that tweet from John Graham.
I did.
It could get away from them real quick.
Yeah, he said that.
I'm all for that.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I think that golf course doesn't really have its full teeth if it's playing soft. It just becomes a target golf. And I can't even imagine, you know, having played it in somewhat wet conditions before, I can't even imagine playing in firm conditions, that's for sure. You know what, I'm going to...
Just before you go, the Sawgrass the course where they had that absolute massacre way back in the day where, like, it was, everything was so hard... Like 80s were the normal for like 4 days in a row. I forget.
They had to soften the golf course. Actually, yeah.
Like it was from a long time ago. Actually, yeah. You know,
when I'm it first opened.
Guys, yeah, I've given these guys way too much publicity today. But there's a No Laying Up podcast, literally about these massacres, the biggest massacres in golf. Where they just everything got away from them, and they broke it down this tournament. Go back and listen to that; it's hilarious. They found quotes from back then, and yeah, highly recommend it.
All right, I like that. You know what? I'm going to go back to the well again. I won some decoy wine with this guy, so I'm going to do it. Again, I think his game really fits this golf course. Not that it fits, it doesn't fit any golf course, but whether it's soft or firm, even though obviously he doesn't have the same experience here as maybe some of the other players do. Yeah, Jerry Kelly. That's exactly who it's going to be. No, I'll take Colin Morikawa. Easy pick. You know what? I could just put money on him all year at every single event. You know, it's going to pay off at some point as it has already.
Yeah, I mean, you're getting 17-1 odds on him right now. Yeah. 19-1 odds on him right now. If that's how it stays, like he's going to win every. Well, it feels like 1 in 10 tournaments right now, 1 in 20 tournaments. Like, chances are you might catch up. So that's a good pick. I'm gonna go with Justin Thomas for my next pick. Ooh. I think he hits the ball to the moon. You're gonna need that this week. He putts well, he chips well. I think things are starting to go behind him a little bit in terms of the bad club. He also, you know, recently lost his father. Or not his father, wow, his grandfather. Jeez. Yeah, that could have been dark.
You're killing off tournaments and dads. Wow.
Yeah, I think that this is one that he wants on the mantle as well, the Players Championship. This is one where the Players, you know, it's one of the hardest ones to win all year, and he wants to be that guy, getting good odds at 19-1 as well for him. So, yeah, let's sneak in there with JT.
All right. My second one here is going to be a guy who has actually been trending very nicely of late. And I think a lot of people would be in his corner to see him coming down the stretch on Sunday and hoisting this trophy, Jordan Spieth. You know what? He's been doing a bunch lately. And, you know, while this golf course definitely is something that rewards a more precise driver of the golf ball, I think there's just some grit about him that really matches up with this golf course. I could be completely wrong. This could go one way or the other way. I don't think it's going to fall in the middle. He's either going to play really spectacular or he's going to fail spectacularly. So we're going to find out, and I'm going to put my cash on him.
Wow, that's big. I don't know. I think if the tournament ends on Saturday, he's going to win. It's just like if every major ended on Thursday, Charlie Hoffman would have beat Jack's record. He always seemed to be leading tournaments come Thursday, especially at Augusta. If you could find that now, like I can't wait. I don't think he's in the Masters this year, Charlie Hoffman. I don't think he is yet. But if he is, throw first round leader because he's always. I wish back then, you know, you could gamble in Canada on it. Okay, so you got Spieth and Morikawa. I got JT and CC. It feels like a layup. Like I'm not going far with this one if you actually look at the odds. But I don't know. I can't leave Rory off the board right
now. Oh, yeah.
He's so close.
Yeah.
He's won there before. He knows what it needs, you know, what it takes to get it done. And he's playing great, kind of in his backyard. He's back home. He's feeling good. Maybe the wife and the kids show up.
He is technically the defending champion because he won in 2019.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I totally forgot. Yeah, why not? There we go. That makes it even better. Rory McIlroy back to back.
You stole that one from me. So I'm going to go the other way with one of my backup players, somebody who, again, has been playing well of late. I know he can score well because he has definitely posted some low rounds on the PGA Tour. Love his ball striking. Do not always love his routine as far as pre shot routine in the space of play.
Let me guess. Let me guess.
You know who it's going to be.
Guy, Patrick Cantlay.
You got it. Patrick Cantlay. I think you can get him right now at about 22 to 1. I think, you know what? If you're going to steal Rory on me, then I'm taking Cantlay.
Yeah. Don't worry. I wasn't taking him. All right. We're in the 100 to 1 section now. We're getting deep in the odds. I'm really bummed out that Jason Kokrak is 81. By the way, there's a. I gave some a take last week about Jazz Gen 1 finishing top 10 from David Byrne, and he obviously did not pull that off. Unfortunately, with an 82 or 83 on Sunday.
Close through 54 holes. T7
looks 54 good. Holes. There's some people saying, watch out for Jason Kokrak to win this entire season this year. You know, all the stats are leading towards that. So I might sprinkle on Jason Kokrak this week for a top 10. But if I'm looking at in the 100 to 1 category, wow. Ricky Fowler, you're getting 141 on him. I mean, I don't want him right now, but that's high. That's high. I'm actually going to go with... It sounds crazy. I'm going between Chris Kirk and Keegan Bradley right now. I'm struggling here.
Bradley played well last week.
Yeah, I know, but something's Chris hits it high. He's been playing well since his rehabilitation and everything. I think it would be a great story. You know, that's the story I want. So that's the story I'm going with. I'm going Chris Kirk as my final pick, and he's going off the board at 126 to 1.
All right. I've got a guy who has won in the last couple weeks, but is getting no respect here for the Players' Championship, going at 125 to 1, Brandon Grace. You know what? Won in Puerto Rico, not getting any love at all. And you know what? I know it was Puerto Rico and it's an opposite field event, but he's on form. He's proven himself as an international winner. And I think this is a title that he would love to have in his bag. And I certainly think he has the skills to get it done.
He's actually going at 161.
You got him? Oh, okay.
That is crazy. There's some good odds deep there. Cooch, I mean, I don't know. I think
I haven't seen much from him of late, though.
I think the game's heading the wrong direction. Cooch is going to be one of the best Champions Tour players of all time. Though every time I bring that up, it's like he's only 37. He's been that way forever. I don't know how old he actually is, 42 or something like that now. So yeah, I have no idea. Ricky at 140, that's crazy. Bubba.
Kevin Streelman could be a sneaky pick. I think he's in the probably 150, 170 in that range.
Yeah, Putnam's got him been on your sneaking sheets. Around. I like Robbie McIntyre, top 10 maybe. Scotsman. Should get some good odds. Yeah, deep. Henrik Stenson, 250. I know he's not playing good, but can you really count him out?
No.
All right, well, that's the draft for the week. Cool. What are your thoughts? What are you hoping to see this week at the Players' Championship?
You know what? I'm just looking for a lot of entertainment. I love the last three holes in this golf course, 16, 17, 18. Obviously, you know, everybody's familiar with them now. They've become something that's iconic in the game. People are familiar with it as much as they are, you know, some of the holes even at Augusta. And I think I just want to see something that's really close, some players back and forth and some drama on those holes. So I want to see some water balls on the last three holes that are going to change the course of this tournament.
You've played it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what did you, the first time you played it, get to set 17, did you put one in the water?
I sure did. I made four though.
All right. Like, so drop, same spot or you went to the drop zone?
Yeah. So we happen to be playing, I think I mentioned this on the podcast before, we played with a guy who was on the PGA Tour, but didn't have status to get in the Phoenix Open at that time, Dan Olson. And I think he was playing 144. There was a back pin and we were trying to keep an eye on the flags. He was kind of telling us when to hit and I hit and I got a little bit of gust and it flew over the flag and dumped into the water in behind. And then, you know, we're standing there and I'm like, oh, should I go up to the drop area? He's like, no, just hit here. I mean, you know, this is where you want to hit from. And then he's like, I'll tell you when. So we just watched all the combination of the flags and he's like, go. And I hit one on the exact same line. I couldn't have flushed it any better. And it stopped literally like about 3.5 feet from the hole. And I made that for the four. But I definitely dunked one on 18. 16, I played well and made birdie there. But it's definitely mentally, I couldn't even imagine. Imagine coming down the stretch there, playing for $2.7 million is the first prize this week. $15 million is the purse. Having all the
fans out there, knowing what was on the line as far as exemptions, you know, the fact that you can end up playing on the tour for another 10 years and, you know, all the majors that you can get into. And you know, it's a significant boost to anyone's career. And I couldn't even imagine playing those three holes with all that stuff on the line.
Yeah, it's definitely a course. It's a bucket list course for sure. And hopefully we're looking at potentially going down, living in Florida for a month next year, maybe get around that area. Maybe you can come pop by and go play. I don't know. We'll figure it out. I just want to get some sun at this point.
Yeah, it's worth the cash. I mean, when we played it, it was the last tee time that was available. It was PGA Show week. There was obviously not a lot of, discounts or availability even for media and stuff, even though, they helped us out a little bit at the hotel. But I think it was $375 US at that point to play. And, you know, I was prepared to do that. And Jeff was a nice guy and gave it to me as sort of a birthday gift. It was around my birthday time. And then we went out and played and certainly enjoyed it. But it's definitely one of those golf courses, of the TPC golf courses, and I've played a number of them. It is definitely the one that you want to play, and at least to say you've done it. It's way different than what people might imagine it to be as far as a major championship venue versus other ones. But when you see how impeccable this place is, and it'll certainly satisfy you. I think even more than, I hate to say it, I enjoyed it more than maybe going to Pebble Beach.
Is wow.
No, that's, I know Pebble Beach is scenery and stuff like that, but just there's certain features and certain things about it.
Could be just more fun too. Right?
I think so. I think it doesn't, I think there's some cool shots on there and while it can beat you up, I think it's a case of how it beats you up is either you hit it in the water or you don't hit it in the water. It's not somewhere in between where you're chopping it out of ice plant 10 times or whatever. And there's certainly opportunities. Doesn't matter who the golfer is. They're going to have a chance during their round to make a run at a birdie or two, which will leave them pretty satisfied by the end of the day.
Oh yeah, for sure. You mentioned Jeff there. Decided to be a rival podcast.
a complimentary podcast.
No, I'm viewing it as like we got to do like political campaigns against each other and stuff. Like, you know, like when there's an election and then like, you know, this, you say a bunch of bad stuff. It's like this message was approved by the TikTok podcast, right? Just like go back and forth each week and see how far we can get it.
That could be funny actually. Yeah. So what he's done is he's introduced the 613 Golfer podcast. You know, really we take on a pretty wide range of topics. Our audience now is reaching, we've had downloads and over 70 countries, have a strong audience, not only in Canada, but, you know, heavy in the US and stuff as well. And we take on bigger topics. And, you know, what he wanted to do was just a more complimentary type thing that really takes on local stuff. So he has a lot of local guests to the National Capital Region of Canada, talking about topics and golf courses and things that are more local to there. So I think the two of them will play well nicely together and hopefully nicely together with potential sponsors as well.
Yeah, I'm still down for a smear campaign, though. If you want to make it happen, I think we're gonna lose. I don't think there's a winning situation for us, but
it could be
yeah, it could be. You know, it could be worth it.
All right,
Let's grab a quick break, Scotty, and then we'll come back with the mailbag as per usual and wrap up the episode.
All right, let's get going with the mailbag this week. Obviously, we've got some great questions have come in very quickly, so we're always pleased to see that. Let's get going here. If you were given $750 right now to spend on anything golf, what would you spend it on?
Yeah, I mean, it could go a lot of different ways. I don't have a membership right now for the year. I don't know if I'm going to. I don't know how much golf I'm going to get in, sadly.
Are you looking for maybe a cart bag that holds a baby?
Yeah, I need like a car seat attachment for the golf.
There's got to be a bag boy. There's got to be a click gear or a bag boy accessory.
Maybe. That's a good call. I'm looking forward to going to the, babies love going for drives, right? I got him for an hour. I just go chip and putt for an hour. Go to the range and he just sits there sleeping behind me. So I look forward to that. So for me, Yeah, I guess I'd put that towards a membership right now. That's a boring answer, though. So what I'm going to say is there's a couple new pairs of Jordans that I saw that are looking pretty nice. I actually picked up two new pairs of golf shoes already for the season out of the blue, and one were a pair of Jordans. So maybe I'll go with some Jordans. I don't need them. I have like 20 pairs of golf shoes. I got new clubs. I got everything's new. Yeah. So that's, if I'm going to go crazy, let's do that. Maybe a start of membership and some Jordans.
All right. I like that. I think for me, I would invest it in something friend related, you know, looking at the fact that, you know, hopefully at some point here we get to travel a little bit more, I'd invest it in a trip, you know, one of the trips that maybe, you know, I get to go on a fair number of business trips for golf from the media side of things. I'd love to just do an anonymous trip, you know, grab some buddies, go play, just pay your green fees, do your thing, no responsibilities as far as, you know, media coverage or things like that. Just pick a destination that you really like, use the cash for that, have a great time. You know, maybe it's just a weekend or something like that, but just a buddy trip more than anything.
Well, let's pitch this. What if, what do you say late August, we do a drive down out east, and we end up making a stop at, you know, one of the top five golf courses in the world, and check that out for a few days and drive on back. I think you and I could split the driving pretty good and get some content while we're out there. What are your thoughts? I'm gonna throw that out there.
I might be interested in that. We'll just hopefully the Atlantic bubble opens up, and hey, we can make it happen, and that could be a fun time, that's for sure. And all I right. love the content angle.
Yeah, why not? We'll see.
All right. Another travel one. Well, another travel one. I made that one a travel one, but this one is a travel one. And I'm not sure how familiar you are with these destinations, but obviously somebody else is trying to figure out a fall golf trip for the year. They're looking for a fall golf trip for four couples. They're trying to choose between Myrtle Beach, Biloxi, which would be in Mississippi, or Virginia Beach. How's your experience with those?
I haven't been to either of them, but I like the idea. I love the people of Virginia. I think they're lovely. They're nicer than people of West Virginia. Just going to say it, throwing it out there. So that's
that's why they canceled the tournament, because you were
mean to them. See, it's me. It's always me. Hey, I love Canadians. I don't know why they canceled that. So why don't you give a pick? You've been there.
Yeah, I've been Virginia Beach only one time, Biloxi a few times, Myrtle Beach a million times. I would say if it's couples, I would probably look at Biloxi, believe it or not. Great spot on the Gulf Coast, usually good weather for a longer part of the year. The reason why I'd recommend the reason I'd recommend this probably for couples is the fact that in Biloxi as well, you've got the casinos as well. So some really high-end accommodations. You don't get as much of that as in Myrtle Beach or Virginia Beach. They're definitely just, you know, beachside communities, destinations, although Myrtle Beach is just full of golfers. But if you want something a little bit more premium as far as a nice place to stay, some better choices of restaurants, not to say that there's not some good restaurants in Virginia Beach and Myrtle Beach, but you're going to have a wider range in Biloxi. And a lot of those are tied to the casinos. Quality golf courses there as well, and fairly affordable. So, and you know, you've got a beach, but Gulf of Mexico is pretty sweet for Biloxi. So if you're this person, Biloxi, Mississippi is my surprising answer.
I love it. Plus you get a drive through Mississippi and the people down there, and that's
awesome.
Chaotic.
It's awesome. It's so good. All right. Well, guess what? I'm not surprised that this topic has jumped into our mailbag here, but do you think this, as in being canceled 2 years in a row, will hurt the RBC Canadian Open going forward?
We said this actually last week, I believe, that we did not believe that would be the case. One of the oldest golf tournaments, one of the oldest open tournaments out there. Nah, I think if it stays in this, especially if it stays in the spot where it is the week before the U.S. Yeah. Open, there's not a chance. Players want to play the week before the U.S. Open. It got a better field last year because of that. You know, I think Rory really helped the momentum. It will have been 2 years at that point, but no, it will be back. It might take a while before it becomes what it was, but it will be back 100%.
Yeah, I don't think it'll hurt it. In fact, I think it may help it, really. I mean, I think you're going to end up with a situation of some people that maybe haven't been going the last number of years and then realizing that, hey, you know what? It hasn't been around for the last 2 years, so I shouldn't just take it for granted. Maybe is the time to, you know, grab some tickets and head out to the championship. So, no, I'm agreeing with you in the fact that I don't think it'll hurt it. In fact, I think it might help it. All right, on the same vein here, now that the RBC is canceled, what are the odds the CP Women's Open will happen? I think we get to answer this one every few weeks, and yeah. I guess it's more just updating of where we're at relative to what's happened now with the RBC Canadian Open.
I think this one's going to be real good. My understanding is the goal for the country is have anybody that wants to be vaccinated to be vaccinated by August. It's a lot of the people coming in will be coming from the States. I would assume they will be vaccinated. I assume by then the borders will be open. My guess is probably they'll start loosening it up for people that can prove they've been vaccinated coming in July is my guess. So being in August, I see it happening. Yeah, it's also in BC. They're in a better spot. Who knows? But I see it happening. And it took a while even last year for them to cancel this one. Ultimately, it was going to be canceled because of the border. But, you know, they went a little further and like, can we make this actually work? So, yeah, I think it's going to happen. But do you have a different thought or things you've been hearing?
No, not really. Because, I mean, I think when you look at it, you know, it's no disrespect to the tournament. But, you know, for the scale of the event, it is definitely a smaller scale event than the RBC Canadian Open, you know, as most LPGA Tour events are. As far as logistics are concerned, not quite as many volunteers, not as many people, TV crews, stuff like that. So there's a smaller, it's a smaller circus around it. So that does give them the flexibility to wait longer. And I think, I don't think they're going to get pressured from the LPGA Tour to, you know, make a decision so that they can replace it with something else. I think, again, the LPGA, you know, they've proven their flexibility in their schedule and, you know, they would probably be able to put something in its place a lot faster than maybe trying to move around the big, you know, battleship that the PGA Tour is as far as their events. So I'd say the odds are pretty good. You know, if somebody wanted to tell me, you know, or wanted us to say a percentage, I would put it at 80 to 85% that this happens.
Nice. I like that. I like to call out on the flexibility. You know, they've been open. They're quick. They're quick to cancel. They're quick to move.
Yeah.
They can move it around and move another tournament. And it's way easier to do that at that level, especially just from getting a course set up to the logistics. Way, way easier to do at that level than it's at the PGA Tour.
I totally agree. All right. Two more here. Next one's equipment related. What should I be looking for in a gap wedge?
The right gap.
Yeah, that's a great start. That's for sure.
Find out what your sand wedge is, find out what your pitching wedge is, find out how far both of those go, and make sure you meet it in the middle. Yeah, I don't know. Well, that's the simplest way to put it. Maybe you can go further, but that's my thoughts. It's a gap. That's all it is.
Yeah, loft is really the biggest thing. I guess for some people, they have to look at, you know, integration, how they want to integrate it. Do they look at it as a wedge, something that's matching more their, you know, sand wedge and lob wedge, or something that's integrating more with the look of their set? That could be something that comes into account. The other thing that they should look at as well is the CG location. So talk to your fitter and go through and see where the center of gravity is located on this gap wedge. Get that to match up as well with the trajectory that you're looking for. So all of a sudden, if you end up with a you know, a gap wedge with a very low center of gravity, you know, and it's launching higher in the air, you could end up with some weird separations and distances and trajectory with your pitching wedge and your lob wedge as well. So yeah, I think the integration is a big part here, but really the key, as you mentioned, is the loft, and also look at the bounce as well. I mean, again, this is not a, you know, are you using this gap wedge for full shots or using it for partial shots? That could change how your turf interaction is. So that may affect what you need for the grind and the bounce of that club. But, you know, work with a qualified fitter, bring the rest of your clubs, really be particular about what you want from it, and then go from there. Okay, last one here. Hey, we got a food one this week. We've been asking for them for the last little while. Best large chain pizza, in your opinions?
All right, I'm going to give you my best and then my worst.
Okay, all right, I want to hear this.
The best for me, never a doubt. It's always of quality. It's always the same. It's always crispy and greasy and... always, you can get a deal. I want it now. I'm like, my mouth is foaming. I want it. Pizza Hut.
Oh,
can't out Pizza the Hut.
Oh,
you can very much out Pizza the Hut, but from a chain standpoint, you cannot out Pizza the Hut.
You're That's big on cardboard with so-called cheese on it.
No, it's caramelization on the crust, the pan pizza. All right, let's hear yours. Let's go.
Well, where's your worst first?
Well, maybe my worst is your best, and then it would be devastating.
We're just flipping. Best one for me, I'm a fan of Papa John's within chains. For me, I think it's just their sauce that they have. It's a little sweeter than some of the other ones. And that's just a preference. That's it for me. Pizza just around the corner here, but you won't see me crawling that door too much.
Pizza's brutal too. Papa John's, we actually had it last week. My wife had a craving. I just, whatever. At this point, you get whatever you want and you let me know what I got to do. And it just got, it brought me no joy. Where Pizza Hut always brings me joy. The worst one, though, you'll never see me ordering it. Rory McIlroy would be upset. Domino's.
Yes, we agree.
So bad. It's 100%. So bad.
Yeah. There's literally one 310 yards from my house here. And we got to be pretty desperate to darken its door quick and fast and whatever. Not a big fan of their sauce. Get some weird stuff with orders sometimes. And it's just, never
right. It's,
yeah. So
They used to have a good cheesy bread back in the day, but even like, so bad. Either way, don't buy from chain pizzas. Go to like local.
Yeah,
what's for the sure. Let's give some local pub. What's the best local place for you?
Local place for me. I mean, we used to get Geno's all the time.
Yeah, Geno's has been our favorite so far. Yeah,
where unfortunately we had one out this way and it closed up. And I mean, they were legendary even from delivery. And my one roommate used to order it all the time. And you know, the drivers.
I told you, you're not supposed to call your wife your roommate. She doesn't like
yeah,
that.
The drivers would come in like 5 feet of snow and then make sure he got there. So you know, it's a great one that way. And so what about you?
Geno's. Back in the day we used to order a lot from Tony's.
Oh yeah.
Which is I believe right where your old golf shop used to be, right? Just down
in that neighborhood, yeah.
Down that neighborhood. Mama Mia's back in the day before she sold off the place. Man, I could go all day. Yeah. But if we're talking if you're sitting down restaurant, my mine's Atomica. Like I love their pizza. People always say Wooden Heads in Kingston. Atomica for me.
I like Score Pizza too.
Score is impressive. Yeah. They're a little chain. You could call them a chain, and it feels.
No, but they started in Kingston. Yeah.
Yeah, it feels like you're getting just small pizzas, right? Like a restaurant style pizza, but it's quick. It's every topping you want. It's easy. Yeah, I could. Yeah, now I'm just hungry now.
I could see that. So anyways, thanks everyone for the questions. Keep them coming, especially the food questions.
Oh, yeah. We don't want to talk golf. We just want to talk food.
Yeah, so we appreciate it. But keep rolling them at us, and we'll keep tackling your questions.
Yeah, exactly. Why don't we roll the ball to the right spot, Scotty? How do you like that? And hit the tip of the week.
All right, tip of the week here is really the emphasis on ball position. A lot of people think ball position is a really simple thing. They think of it as a fundamental, obviously, but it's a basic. It's part of the integration of your golf swing, but it affects a lot of things that happen. And really, you can make the exact same golf swing, but just a small change in your ball position, you can totally change, your angle of attack. You can change how much loft that you deliver on the club. You can change your spin rate. You can change the path of the club, the face angle, the height that you achieve, and your overall distance. So it's something that you shouldn't neglect. And I know in working even with elite players, these are players that, they're very particular about what they're doing with their ball position. They just don't casually throw the ball down there and just hit it. They're very particular about where it is each time. And, a lot of times people will diagnose differences in their shot shape basically by changing their golf swing. In a lot of cases, it's just by a change in their ball position. And you can really affect what happens more than just trajectory, which is what a lot of people think, a ball going up or down. It also changes the strike as well, the quality of the strike on the club face. So it does change a lot of things. So I would key in for a lot of people when they're practicing, especially at the start of the year, set up a practice station where you can try and get the similar ball position each time. Again, I could get into what it should be for kind of each player, but it's very individual. obviously, as we have a driver, we're probably more towards the, you know, kind of our left armpit, and then working back maybe towards the middle of our stance a little bit as we get to our shortest irons. But all those things come into play and affect things that are going on in your golf swing. So don't be callous about it. Be particular about your ball position.
Love it. All right. That's it for this episode. We have the Players' Championship. Either I'm bringing over two bottles of wine or one and getting one. A little trade-off. We'll have to see. Hopefully, by next week, we got some updates on the simulator. Maybe we'll have played a round of golf. That's what I'm hoping for. I need to hit some balls here. And I'm hoping the weather's turning around. Maybe we'll see some golf in the future. Scotty, any final thoughts before we wrap things up?
No, like I said, month away from the Masters, you know, really getting into the season here. And I think everybody's going to be really fired up based on what last year was like. So excited for what's ahead for us and chatting golf with a lot of great listeners.
For sure. Well, thanks, Brad, for coming on. Thanks to our producer, editor extraordinaire, Brendan, for throwing the edit together, getting us sounding good. Can't make us look good, but it's getting us sounding good, that's for sure. And thanks to all the listeners. We are going to be back next week, as per usual, and we will chat with you then.